The chances of anything coming from Mars are a million to one, he said, but still they come. That's right, it's season two of the Tux Radar podcast. We're still here, and I'm still Paul Hudson.
Graham Morrison.
Oh.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm still, amazingly, Mike Saunders.
And it's a new season, so we're going to be changing the format around
a little bit. It's all changed.
A couple of little changes. More Mike, less hey. Andrew breathing. Thanks to all your feedback on the forums. And of course, we're always publishing news, features, and more on tuxradar.com. So bookmark it today. And you can subscribe to Linux Format and buy us all nice stuff at tinyurl.com/podcastlxf. And in this episode, three quarters of all Linux developers are now corporate scabs, while Facebook gets busy with PHP. We have our new challenge section, which you have to try and wait or fast forward to find out what we're going to be doing to ourselves. No. And our open ballot, is Ubuntu wrong to switch to Yahoo for the default Firefox search engine?
Right, and it's time for the news.
After 4 weeks.
Yes. So much has happened.
4 weeks of news, and really we had a bit of difficulty finding stuff that we thought was high profile enough for our amazing podcast.
It hasn't been that active, has it?
Well, that's because we were busy planning for this podcast.
That's very true. We just came out of the development cupboard yesterday.
Yep. Well, millions and millions of lines of recent kernel code have been trawled through, and it has been decided that 75% of this code has been written by people paid to do it. So long gone is the myth that Linux is developed by geeks sitting in their bedroom doing everything for free. 75% of the kernel is being developed by people who are being paid.
I mean, yeah, this is serious, isn't it? This is absolutely clear that Linux is a major commercial operating system now. I found it fascinating that no company has one big, huge chunk of that. The biggest company taking part is Red Hat with 12%. Just 12%. Then it's Intel with 8% and Novell and IBM with 6% each. So no company has a big stake in the kernel.
Red Hat's contributions were twice as big as Novell's.
Yeah.
Curious.
And yeah, there's still only a small part, only, you know, around a tenth. So it's not like one company can steer Linux kernel development.
It's about an eighth, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. If you think about it. I just like rounding up numbers.
This is about a tenth.
All right, a ninth then. So
That's really interesting. Did it any further breakdown in what people are doing with it? I mean, you can tell Intel are probably doing driver stuff, but, you know, what's Red Hat doing mostly?
Well,
I mean,
Red Hat have their fingers in lots of different parts of the kernel pie, don't they? It was interesting that Google aren't up there at the moment, but Google do want to
they
be more
stuff, don't they?
They want to be more publicly involved in kernel development, so
they do actually, yeah, they tend to wait and then do all at once. But I think so far Google keeps its stuff to itself. The GPL only applies when you distribute the stuff,
if you give it to the people. Yeah,
so Google currently isn't distributing most of their stuff, in which case they can keep the changes themselves. They just hired Ted Cho, though,
the file system developer.
Well, that's newsworthy.
Well, there you go. I should have positioned really, shouldn't I? Yes, because they're switching to EXT4, because it has advantages for them.
So what, all of Google's 50,000 servers will be in EXT4?
Yes. So he's obviously faster. The man who will know what to do.
Correct. Like, he's the guy who said to us the amazing bit of trivia that Google doesn't use journals for its file systems, because when things go wrong, they just blank the server and put it on again. It's not a big loss, and they've got so many servers that journals are basically pointless.
Really?
Okay. Now, they may rue that one day.
I hope I don't lose all my email because of this.
Well, duplicity is going to be part of their business plan, isn't it? It's not going to be something they rely on the journal to do, I imagine.
Presumably, yeah.
Duplicity, that's got nice meanings to it. I thought, what are you trying to say about Google?
The next story is Facebook. Facebook relies on PHP for its billions and billions of web page impressions.
How many billions?
You just told me, and it was... Seven a day. I can't remember.
Many
billions.
I think 400 billion page views a month, approximately.
400 billion with a planet of 6 billion people.
I think that's mostly Katie
the
Foster
kids.
And I.
Plus. But you do watch them just refreshing Facebook.
Yeah.
So there's probably only three or four people.
Is Katie still at work? I often like just go on it just to see if she's still there. She's still there. Refresh.
So yeah, they got a load of Facebook developers into a quiet room in a quiet part of Facebook complex and rewrote the PHP runtime, as much as I understand.
Yes.
Making everything much, much quicker.
Much betterer.
Paul, as a published author on the wonders that is PHP, is this significant?
That's my O'Reilly book, PHP. I think it's awesome. Just to, if you guys haven't heard about this, what they've done is really, really clever. It's basically like Vala to C Sharp. So you know C Sharp, it's all interpreted in mono, and Vala takes the C Sharp-like language, turns it into C code, and compiles it in GCC. Facebook, they've called it Hip Hop, takes PHP, converts to C++, and then converts that to machine code. So you get extremely fast PHP, while giving up some only a few tiny bits of the language. For example, eval, obviously, is gone. But most things work, and it's very, very fast.
And what about giving up your freedom? Is this all free software, this
technology?
They're going to
give it all away. They invite the PHP guys over to talk about it, because they don't want to do, obviously, a fork. They'd rather help as much as possible.
And roll some of this back into PHP.
Yeah, they'd rather, obviously, get as much as they can into the community. And they're planning to, so it'll all be open.
Have there ever been other PHP compilers before?
There have been other compilers before, quite a few. Although the preferred way right now is what's called a code cache, because there's two steps to PHP. Read all the source code, convert it to intermediate language,
right,
and then go from intermediate to execute. And the idea right now is to store the intermediate bit in RAM or in a file somewhere and just load that and just run that straight away. So that's where we are most of the time right now. This thing is your first one to actually go to real machine code, which is awesome.
Direct onto the metal.
And they binned Apache too. They got an extra 0.5% of performance by binning Apache, which is incredible. For them, it sounds like nothing to us, but 0.5% when you've got thousands of servers.
If you're talking billions of
CPU time being saved.
But I'm surprised that the two web servers were so similar that there's only 0.5% difference between the two. On such a large scale deployment, you'd think that there'd be a
think about it. It makes sense because they've switched. They said going from PHP to hip hop saved them 50% of the CPU time.
50%.
Wow.
Which, think about it though. You go from PHP, ridiculously slow language, to machine code, 50%.
Yeah.
That tells me maybe their code isn't that fast at this point. So I understand why Apache is only 0.5% slower than their custom written HTML server, because maybe their one isn't that good as yet. But I guess they'll go a long way. Yeah, 50% is huge, but when you think of what you've just done, it should be a lot bigger, and I think it may still get bigger. They've written all this cool stuff to figure out, because PHP has variables like, you know, var I equals a string, right? And then say I plus 1, it adds 1 to a string, but it figures it out and does the right thing automatically. You can't do that in C. So they've done all this cool stuff to make it work, and apparently it works.
So what are the advantages in writing stuff in PHP then, if it's only going to end up as C or C++ in the end?
Well, it's obviously much easier, isn't it? I mean, have you ever tried to write a CGI?
Yeah, I know.
You've got just even parsing the request string isn't terrifically easy. You've got to start from the very, very basic. So there's still loads of advantages to PHP. In fact, this makes it even better to use PHP.
Right.
Because when you really need it, it'll work. Although, flip side, small sites make no difference. Because you're mostly in SQL land. It won't rewrite your SQL queries to be faster or anything.
Sure, right.
So no difference.
Okay, thanks for that message from our sponsor. Now, the news story that we're all most interested in is... the small company from Cupertino.
Cupertino?
Cupertinchinetto in California has announced, is it called the I?
It's the iSlate, right. From Apfel Computer, I think.
We don't care about the beautiful sleek lines and thin profile of this device. What we're interested in, what does this mean for Linux? How are we going to be able to compete with that beautiful, grease-proof, multi-touch,
oleophobic,
tactile, bright?
Yes. I think the answer is we can. We're all absolutely...
there's so many lovely products coming from the likes of MSI and Co., though, that, you know, surely it's going to be easy if we just make them cheap.
I think...
They're already cheap.
I think what you've just said then is, how do we compete? That should be the crux of it. You know, we've seen all over the internet 20 trillion news stories about the iPad, and a lot of people are annoyed by the way it's locked down in typical Apple fashion. Fair enough if that's what you think.
There's no FireWire ports.
So it's an internet device, so, you know, personally I'm not bothered about it being locked down. It's the kind of thing I'd give my parents to get on the internet with. But the best thing...
It's very generous of you, Mike. It's got $400.
I didn't mean give. $500. Recommend that they buy themselves.
Locked down is an understatement as well.
Mr. Saunders, I hope you're listening.
this was Andrew speaking, honest. But the thing is, you know, so many people are saying, oh, don't buy this, it's evil, Apple's being evil. The best way that we can promote free software is by having a device like this that's purely free software. That's the best way to compete, and not just shout words and get into internet arguments and you know, whinge and whine. Let's get a free software product out like this.
Radar pad.
The Tux pad, yeah.
I think the real problem is that Linux is far too much like a democracy, whereas Apple is just run as like a monarchy, basically. Everything that Steve says goes. So he has complete control. And fortunately for their products recently, he seems to have a lot of sense in what actually is allowed to come out. It's never going to happen with Linux because everybody's going to have a say and it's going to fudge up the vision.
There is an awesome video of the MSI device in action in CES from about 3 weeks ago. And you get things like out of memory error.
Oh, lovely. Is this Android?
It's running Android, yeah. Trying to view pictures, which you're going to want to do. And you don't want to see error messages on your phone or your pad or whatever.
You don't want to know about memory on your...
Memory you shouldn't care about. Ever. You ask someone how much RAM's in the iPad, most people don't know because Apple haven't announced how much RAM's in there because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It just runs stuff and the RAM's invisible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Google as well has announced, or hasn't announced, there are rumours that Google's Chrome OS will have touch functionality.
The video was pathetic. It was awful.
It sounds like something desperately dreamed up as made their announcement.
It was razor-thin device with almost no bevel, a huge screen. It's just, what are you thinking, guys? That's never gonna happen.
When you pick it up, you're always touching the touch screen and sending spurious inputs into the device.
It's all quite depressing, and I think what it highlights is that the divide isn't a technological divide. You know, I think we have the capabilities, but we just don't really have the will or the singular vision to make it happen. I think that might be what defines Linux in this coming decade. Actually, a move from the brown mishmash of what it is now into something that maybe is more refined, hopefully.
But because all these components are open, it is still technically possible that somebody could come along and make a really good product.
That's not what Graham's saying, though. Mm. It's whether someone will come along to have the vision to make what is possible happen.
Then we need Steve Jobs to defect to the free software community. So he has the vision.
So if you're out there, you know...
Steve.
Yeah.
And you want a job swap with RMS.
Yeah. That's it.
That's all the news.
Now, possibly the most exciting thing to have happened to this podcast in the last 15 minutes and 29 seconds. I'm introducing a new section.
Wow.
Here it comes.
No, it's called You Dare Us.
You Dare Us?
Which kind of gives you a clue. What we want is for every fortnight, we want an idea for something that we can do. Nothing offensive, obviously.
like a challenge.
Well, exactly like, in fact, the challenges that we did last year.
Uh-huh. When we used KDE and the Bing, command line and Bing.
Stuff like that.
Oh, yes. I remember the days.
And to kick it off with something nice and easy... Well, actually, no. It won't be very easy, will it?
No.
To kick it off with something monumentally hard, like climbing the Matterhorn, we're going to give up the command line for 2 weeks.
Give up the command line?
Give up the command line.
But what else is there? What else is there? I don't get it.
I'm still only using the command line. What am I left with?
How do you delete things?
Well, how do you write a special edition about creating your own website without the command line?
I think you press move to trash.
Yeah.
That means delete, apparently.
Get rid of.
In the GNOME's wordy fashion.
Anyways, don't jump the gun. We're going to report on this in 2 weeks' time.
Wow.
And when we will hear from you, the listener, about what our next challenge is going to be.
Yes.
So we want your ideas, listeners, then, for things we can do to test our mettle or prove our Linux prowess or just basically punish us if you really hate us.
Yeah, nothing illegal, obviously. please, nothing about KDE again.
No more KDE.
No.
I still have a silly Kubuntu splash screen when I boot up my box.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I can't get rid of it. It won't go away.
Same here, even though I use XFCE.
And from the only command line thing, it made all my Google contacts publishable on Google Chat, so they all see me and, hello, remember me? No, I have no idea who you are, and I just blocked them straight away.
Oh, and it removed all the names, didn't it? So you just got random email addresses.
Yeah. So, I don't know who you are.
So, that's great.
Looking at on empirical evidence, it's going to be a bit of a disaster, really. Anyway, you dare us.
Go on, do it. Buk,
buk, buk. Who dares us wins.
If you don't dare us, you're against us.
And with such pathetic punnery, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, another all-new section.
Another one?
It's groundbreaking.
Really?
It's magical. And our open ballot, is Ubuntu wrong to switch to Yahoo for the default search engine in Firefox? And next time, folks, we'll have a shorter open ballot.
Why is the question, is Ubuntu wrong? Why isn't it Ubuntu right?
Because I'm biased.
How wrong is it?
How can we stop?
It's time now for Discovery of the Week. Which this far...
Spoiled slightly, I think we're out of there.
Which this fortnight is actually discovery of the month and a half, more or less, because we've not done a podcast for about a month and a half.
Well, four weeks.
A month, surely, isn't it?
That's also about a month and a half.
1/10, 1/8.
Yes. So hopefully in the last several weeks, we'll have discovered many, many very cool things that we can all share. Graham, I know you've been champing at the bit. You were saying only a few minutes ago.
Has anybody got any ideas for my discovery of the month?
And then what happened?
I did think of something that I just did discover about a month ago, but it's pretty niche and geeky. It's to do with Linux audio.
Oh.
So there is a Linux connection, which was... anyway... It's the fact that you can... Okay, there's a bit of backstory. On OS X and Windows, the main format for software synthesizers and effects is something called VST, which is a format designed by Steinberg. It's used by nearly everything. It's very widely used, and there are millions and millions of plugins and synthesizers. Anyway, there's nothing quite like that for Linux, although DSSI is trying to compete. Anyway... You can now compile native VST plugins and synths on Linux. This isn't using Wine, which is previously the case if you wanted to get it to work. They are native VST applications and effects running on the Linux digital audio workstation, such as Qtractor or Renoise or whatever it is. And it works really well. I had the opportunity to try it. There are quite a few plugins using the new native VST format. It means that if a developer is working for Windows or OS X, they can easily compile their effects and synths for Linux without really doing much, including a few headers and making a few changes. So it really doesn't cost them anything to make a Linux version, and it could make a big difference because we could do with some decent synth and effects.
So on a scale of rubbish to ace, what's the difference between the natively compiled VST plugins and those running Wine?
As you've used Wine, we've all used Wine, it introduces a whole layer of rubbishness.
Uncertainty.
Fear. I was trying to think of an adjective, and the only thing that came to mind was Pulse Audio. But
That should be an adjective, by
the way.
Yeah. That is so Pulse Audio.
Wine is getting so Pulse Audio.
I've stepped to the Pulse Audio.
But with audio, you know, you want rock-solid stability and quickness, latency. Low rate latency, so it's ace. You don't have to use Wine.
Ace. Well, that sounds ace.
Well, it is. It is if you're interested in Linux
Full
audio.
Of win.
Linux is a great platform for audio. It should be used more, but part of the reason it isn't used more is because there aren't any effects and synths.
And you can read more about what Graham's thoughts on Linux audio in the forthcoming issue of Linux
yes,
Format.
Yes, that's true.
Wow.
When's that on sale? We should know when it's on sale.
3rd of March, I think.
Oh, the 3rd of March.
Brilliant.
Actually, speaking of the forthcoming issue of Linux Format, there's one on sale this week.
There is.
Which
it's
going back
one
to
one after the other, isn't it?
3/4 of Linux code written by paid developers. You can change it because in that issue is a full-on tutorial how everyone, including almost code newbies, can submit their own patches to the kernel. Don't miss it.
That's issue 129, folks. Hello. I assume everybody's staring at me now, so I presume it's my turn.
We should just stare at you, should we, as a cue? We should say some things so that the microphones can pick it up.
Readers and listeners as well, the people who are reading this podcast are particularly impressive. I found something called the card command. I don't know if anybody's aware of this before. There is a command at the command line called card. And what it does is it generates a reference card of a program's command line flags, nicely formatted,
Wow.
With bold text and all the usual bits. And it normally sends it out to the printer. So if you type in card LS, it will send out a reference card to LS to the printer. If you use the dash O flag, you can redirect it to a file, a PostScript file. But I think it's great because it neatly really keeps cool. everything together. And finally, I'll be able to put together some of the, understand some random commands that I've never been able to get my head around.
Is this a hilarious April Fool's joke in the making then? Step one, SSH into someone's machine, instantly enough, you've got an account in there. Then type card GCC. You waste their entire toner in one go.
That's a good point. I didn't try it with GCC. I tried it with a few commands, and it did these A4 type of sheets. So, quite simple, but nicely presented. It only does the command line options, so it doesn't go into a lot of depth. But presumably, yeah, if you did it with GCC, or, cow bell, or whatever that cow...
Cowsay
thing is, yeah.
Ah, that's really cool.
It's actually useful, I think. So
well,
maybe.
Well, it's still nice, isn't it?
Yeah, even if it's not.
It seems that this discovery of the week is turning out to be a big bunch of ace. Let's see if it continues with Paul.
Well, actually, I have to continue the trend. My discovery is, in fact, the best thing since sliced awesome. It's called Term Builder, and naturally I wrote it myself.
Term Builder.
It's a simple little program written in JavaScript, all GPL v3, so you can nick it and modify it. It's on the website at tuxradar.com/termbuilder. And what you do is you just click your way through little menu boxes, combo boxes, little check boxes and stuff to build commands for the command line. When you're ready, there's a box at the bottom with the full command line in, which you can just copy and paste into your terminal and run it. So things like, find all files bigger than 1 megabyte that contain the word moo, and then count the number of lines returned, and then save that to a file. It'll do all that, for example.
I've got to admit, it is the kind of thing I would like to have had when I started out with the Linux command line 10 plus years ago. But can you now do one to build up regular expressions, please?
Is this because you hate mod rewrite?
No, I do a lot of stuff with sed, and it hurts my head when I've got so many backslashes trying to escape.
No reason not to, yes. So that makes absolute sense. There you go. Find in these characters one or more.
Replace that section by that section.
See, that's the next follow on, you see. Regex builder.
Yeah.
That might be painful. It's all done in JavaScript. Because it's all live updating, so I just take a box, the command line updates straight away.
Right.
With the correct options. And I've put in all the best interesting stuff for grep and find and that kind of thing.
I'm not suggesting you do it, but perhaps they should make prisoners do it or something. Cause it'd be...
Could you create, instead, make the output into a small script that we can download and then kind of run without having to use the command line?
Oh! Yes! You have to download it. Yeah, that makes sense. And then right-click and go to permissions and then go to mark executable. Then double-click it and you wouldn't see the output.
Right, can you make a GTK application?
Removing files.
Yeah. It's moved to trash. Seriously, it's just there. Maybe it's not there in KDE. It's probably like five submenus under there somewhere.
No, the move to trash is there, but the trash can is hidden very, very well. So you never know.
Oh, yeah, I remember the trash can. In my KDE, I switched KDE thing where you drag a file and it thinks you want to drag it onto the kicker. So no, I want it in the bin, but it puts it next to the kicker as a file, like, easy clicking.
Oh, I remember that.
It just gets worse and worse.
Poor old KDE.
Yeah. I have no sympathy.
There's a new version out soon.
Wow.
4.45.
That could be a discovery of the week for next fortnight.
Yeah, it's out on Tuesday, I think.
And that just leaves.
That leaves me. And I've just got to bring this whole party down with a whimper. Because I installed WordPress last week. And it just hurt my head so much because I did everything right. But it went all so very wrong. You need the LAMP stack, so I installed Apache in MySQL and PHP. And that all went fine. And then when I went to, which I installed through Synaptic on Ubuntu, and I installed the Ubuntu WordPress package, which the Ubuntu developers have supposedly made work and installed grabbed all the dependencies and all of that lot, only to find that it was giving me all sorts of horrible, horrible errors. And the reason is that the Ubuntu package for WordPress doesn't work on Ubuntu. You've got to go to the website of WordPress and get the plain zip file and install it that way. Well, and it goes, and you look on the WordPress forums, and they all the people chatting there, they don't support the Debian version of WordPress because the config file has been messed about with so much by the Debian maintainer people.
So why is
it's
it
not the way? It's not what package managers are for.
I totally agree
package
with you, Andrew.
Package managers are supposed to make things easier.
It should never be there if it's not.
That's
what
I said. Why is it in the repositories if it doesn't work? He's gone green.
And where did you end up after all your WordPress efforts?
I ended up with a working system, but it took me about 3 days.
Didn't it? Didn't it hit a sort of a low point when you rebooted?
At one point, when you lost your ex.
Oh god! Don't remind me of that.
At one point, Andrew managed to somehow lose his X server in this.
And there was no sign of GNOME at all; it just disappeared.
There was not much of anything. There was not even networking. So yeah, but it was a laugh.
It was.
I'm sure you laughed every minute of it.
Somebody out there had a laugh.
And the way you got it working in the end was downloading it manually.
Yeah.
So there we go, folks.
Didn't Bjorn Strostrup say about C++ that it makes it harder to shoot your foot off? Well, shoot yourself in the foot, but when you do, you lose your whole leg. I think that's what package managers do too. Right. You manage to lose all of GNOME just trying to put WordPress on.
WordPress recommends the deinstallation of Metacity and all that.
GNOME desktop.
Well, anyway, I'm over it now.
You did succeed, though, which is great.
Yeah. Well done. And I did it on my laptop as well when I got home, when I worked out what I'd done wrong. Well, when I worked out, what did I say I'd done wrong?
No, the Ubuntu people had done wrong.
And now it's time for our second all-new section in this season two. It's amazing. This one is called In the Hot Seat. And the plan is fairly straightforward. What's going to happen is, every week, one of us will have to talk for 1 minute with as few hesitations as possible on one particular Linux topic. And we've gone to great expense to make the board of ideas.
This is impressive.
Behold. Wow. Yes, which we will just spin round.
I like the use of foil.
Yeah, once you turn it on, we'll spin it round. And it will spin around and hopefully land on something quite hard. You know, there's KD up there, there's GNOME up there, there's GIMP, other things. And of course, the one that no one actually wants to answer, which is Grub. That's quite difficult.
Oh.
And so we'll spin it around. Hope it lands on Grub, because this week it's Mike Saunders. He's kicking off.
I'm laying myself down on the barbed wire for this, yeah.
So we'll spin it around and see what Mike has to answer. Let's give it a spin.
Oh.
Go on. It's going to Grub.
It's a Grub.
CPIO.
It's just going to have CPIO. All right, then.
Okay,
you tell me
when
to start.
1 minute. No hesitations. CPIO. Take it away.
CPIO is a really annoying command line tool that people use to build and extract archives. And for some reason, some people still put archives on the internet in CPIO format, which I don't understand for 1 minute. And the main reason is because CPIO uses a ridiculous set of command line flags. Unlike zip, unlike tar, unlike all the other commands that do this, CPIO has its own ridiculous way of doing things and spits out crap to standard output. And it's really, really annoying to use. Now, some places that use this are RPM. For starters, so if you're trying to blow apart an RPM package without dealing with the normal database, then you've got to use CPIO. So I am going to start a campaign to either ban CPIO from the universe or to write a wrapper around it so that you can use normal unzip targz type commands around CPIO so that CPIO works normally and therefore everything will be better and people will be happy. Is Paul signaling me to stop now, or is he asking me to? There's 10 seconds still to go about how really bad CPIO is, and I think I've actually done a reasonable job there, so I'm going to say CPIO is crap forever.
Okay. That's not bad.
That was very good.
Well done. We would like your suggestions. We'll take that one off the board and replace it with some suggestions, which will spin the wheel in 2 weeks' time, and so make it hard. We'll make it easy. Mike's now free for the next 4 weeks, so make it really easy.
Woohoo! Yes. I don't want to do Grub, please.
We should actually pick one of us for the next one so that our listeners can choose a particularly
who they hate
fitting
the most.
Permission. Yeah.
Wow.
Punishment, yeah.
That's true.
If it's going to go clockwise, then that's Graham.
We'll obviously have to play off the air audio paper, rock, scissors, stone thing.
Clockwise?
Yeah.
Clockwise?
But we exist only in sound.
All right, if whoever's in your left ear, listeners.
All right, I think that means it's going to be Andrew next. That's called an executive decision, lads.
There we go.
Congratulations.
I did want to say when you said CPIO wrapper, for some reason I just thought of Vanilla Ice.
If somebody wants to make a wrap,
must be the Jedward single.
So going through the comments from last season's finale, this main suggestion was merging Hot Topic and Open Ballot. So we're not quite sure what to call it. Hot Ballot?
Open Topic?
Open Topic.
Hot Botic?
I'm thinking Open Bollock.
Open Bollock.
Anyway, it's our Open Ballot, and the question this month is the incredibly wordy and guaranteed to go wrong. Is Ubuntu wrong or right, apparently, to switch to Yahoo as a default search provider for Firefox in 10.04?
So,
Lucid Links.
Why are they doing this, just to recap?
Money.
Money.
They make monies from it. They've signed a sharing deal, revenue sharing deal with Yahoo, whereby if you search with Yahoo and click an advert, part of the money will come back to Canonical, which is made all the more interesting, which is why it's an interesting question in the first place, because who powers Yahoo? Bing.
Bing.
Microsoft Bing, which means when you search in Ubuntu now, you're using Microsoft's search engine.
Sure.
We asked, I think, you know, about 8 months ago, you know, would you switch to Bing? And now it's, people are switching to Bing whether they like it or not, because it's the default. Now, obviously, you can change it in Firefox, but the default will be to use Bing. So, what do you guys think? Do you think this is craziness? Or do you think any way to help support Ubuntu is a good idea?
I must admit, I don't like it. I don't like it simply because it's not the search engine I use. So it's just going to be annoying. I know it's only going to take me 5 seconds, but it's not Ubuntu, Canonical aren't thinking of me and how I use the desktop. They're thinking of how to make money, and in a slightly annoying way.
It is actually very easy to change the option.
But, yeah.
But the thing is, it's not as easy as you might think. I remember for ages, I was convinced that my Firefox was broken. Because by default, at the time, it wasn't selecting any search provider. So it had a little search, you know, a little magnifying glass. I'd type it in, press enter, nothing would happen. It wouldn't say, hey, you haven't selected, nothing would happen. So I had to actually choose that and then choose Google, and then it would work. So
yeah.
I was a bit slow. It took me a long time to figure that one out. So I'm thinking people who are less interested in, you know, the difference between Bing and Google or Yahoo will just stick with the default.
And doesn't Yahoo Mail generate an unsupported OS message in Firefox on Ubuntu?
I thought you switched to Chrome.
Yeah, and I don't use Yahoo Mail. I just remember something like that.
Oh,
happened.
Possibly, yeah. Well, so. Someone did comment that they already use Yahoo. So he said, Bob the Bob 1234 is a Yahoo user already for search teams. And said, I don't care what the homepage is, so long as it loads quickly. If I can get to my emails even quicker, then all is good. So, pragmatic.
If Yahoo is powered by Microsoft,
yes.
Why are they using Yahoo? Why are they not just using Bing? Because Bing's the sound of found. And we used Bing a while ago and found it not dreadfully bad.
I still use Bing. Not for searching. Just for the homepage. I look at that. That's
just
nice
for
picture.
Pretty pictures.
The pictures are incredible. Yeah. I look at the picture, then go to Google. So I just click up the bandwidth, basically.
Can you not create some sort of extension that shows you the Bing picture?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I think because going straight to Bing would look really wrong. We have partnered with Microsoft, did nothing for Novell's PR, and he would have the same problem. Here it's a bit on the side, you know, Yahoo's powered by Bing. Did you know? No. So it doesn't really matter. But it does mean that MS is technically going to be paying out Linux development.
Which is great. Money from Microsoft. Great.
Is it a bit like when people bought Rage Against the Machine as the Christmas protest number one and the money eventually went to Sony?
Exactly. So when you click an advert in Yahoo, Yahoo gets some of the money, Canonical gets some of the money, but so does Microsoft. So that's not necessarily a good thing. Same for like if you use like all the cashback services for searching, all the Chow, is it? The search shopping thing. So MS owns all that as well. So if you buy something through there, MS gets a cut, you get a cut, everyone gets a cut.
They own Chow, do they?
They own Chow,
wow,
yeah.
Wow, I never even knew that.
Yeah, so they're very cunning about it.
Be careful.
Yahoo doesn't mention Bing anywhere on the homepage.
I noticed that. I tried to find it, yeah. But, I mean, I think Canonical has got to be careful that this is only a very small thing that anybody can change quite quickly, but it's very easy now for the likes of Linux Mint and Co. to stand up and say, we're being really true to the open source community. And, you know, Canonical relies on Ubuntu being the big distro.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a huge name. So far, the distro's been generally good and Canonical been generally good. But it's going to be very easy for... There are already 20 trillion Ubuntu variants spinning up, and Linux Mint and Crunchbang are the two biggest. So it might just push people away into those sub-distros.
Is that all new depth of crappy Ubuntu spin-offs? We've changed the whole search by Google, nothing else.
But it's another thing that, you know, the likes of Linux Mint can advertise. If I was in charge of Linux Mint, I'd say now, you know, we're standing by Google because...
What I don't get is Firefox makes 11 million a year, whereas from Google sharing as it is. Why couldn't Canonical get the same sort of deal? Yeah. Maybe Yahoo outbid Google, perhaps.
Possibly so.
Micro Yahoo outbid.
When will Hotbot start campaigning?
That's one of the great comments I got from Louis Bouger, I'm guessing. I may search for a few things in it so that I can feel like I've done my part to support Ubuntu, then switch to the old trusty AltaVista.
I don't know if he's being serious there or trolling.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Tom Fotherby says, in Ubuntu 10.04, I probably won't change the default search provider in Firefox. But that's because the first thing I'll do is install Chrome and make sure the search is set to Google. So Firefox, no one really cares. So you're using Chrome nowadays.
It has got to that stage, hasn't it?
We've got one here from Francium Duck. I have no problem with MS giving Canonical some revenue. Ultimately, if the search results annoy me sufficiently, I'll overcome the energy barrier to change back to Google. But I'll give Yahoo a fair spin. I think the energy barrier point is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because I'm quite lazy. I'm very lazy.
Mm.
And, you know, most folks out there aren't going to tell the difference. They search for stuff. Bing looks kind of, Yahoo looks kind of like Google. Search results, sponsored links and stuff. They might not even care.
If it's just as fast, yeah. I mean, you know, people want speed. That's how Google's done so well, isn't it? The website has been extremely fast over the years. Mm.
Does anyone think it's flat out wrong, dangerous, to be siding with Microsoft in this?
Not really. I don't like it. I don't like it. Just for the reason I explained before, and I suppose it means I might keep a closer eye. I mean, who is it Canonical using to host their cloud stuff? Have they decided yet? Such as the Ubuntu One things, because there wasn't the talk of them using, I can't remember the name of it, but it's Microsoft's competitor to EC2, Amazon's EC2. And it wouldn't surprise me if Canonical kind of forge more relationships with companies like Yahoo and Microsoft, you know, because they're there to make money, and maybe they feel they've got enough momentum in the open source world now to carry, or Ubuntu itself needs to break away from maybe fan-based Linux support into the wider support where it isn't so important.
Mm. Well, there was a story recently about all these SUSE vouchers that MS bought from Novell.
Yes.
I know everyone hated it, the idea.
Yeah.
But it was $240 million, that's what they paid for it, which is enough to run Canonical for about 5 years.
But the number of companies, wasn't it? Like
yeah,
500 companies.
Yeah, hardly any, yeah. So it's enough, if they were to do the same sort of thing, I'm not saying they're going to, or any means, but it would fund them for like 5 years, which is a very long time.
But I think it would lose my support. I come from a community direction.
So if they were to side even more with Microsoft, you'd say I'm switching away from Ubuntu.
I think so. Yeah, I think I don't blame them. I'm not angry with them, and they've got every right to pursue whatever they want to do. But I kind of like the community. You know, I want to try and support the community and support community Linux.
Okay. Well, HQLT says, to me, it makes absolutely no difference whether Ubuntu supports Microsoft or Google. Both are evil companies only freedom haters love. If Canonical would move from a free to a proprietary search engine, it would be worth discussing. But this change is completely irrelevant to me. I'll keep using my favorite search engine, whether it is default or not. LX Quick seems very popular. That's the anonymous, privacy-safe version of the internet.
But Is this going through Google then? Is it still using Google?
Yeah, I'm not
Google?
Sure exactly how it works, but it seems very popular with
you. End up at Google via Tor Network.
Yeah, it might do.
Notes or something,
But again, the idea is, you know, Google is closed source as well. They don't use source code.
I don't like
all
Google.
Data.
No.
You're scared of Google, aren't you?
I love Google, and I'd love to work for Google. just in case any Google people are listening.
Remixer96 says, Canonical, who we can all agree does great work with the open source community, is looking for ways to get paid. Who else would be more propos to foot its bill than a Microsoft-powered company?
Curious? Well, that's it. Taking money from Microsoft.
But giving everyone else a cut as well.
Yeah, that's the other side to
it. Canonical isn't going to be getting the lion's share of the money, that's for sure.
I do think it's... I mean, you know, we're obviously not big fans of Microsoft at all in the free software community, and that's justifiable given what's happened in computing in the last 20 years. But there needs to be always somebody who's supporting the underdog, and Google is so massive, so dominant on the internet that I think I don't want to use Microsoft products, but
I can't really call Microsoft the underdog, though. It's like calling Nokia the underdog in the iPhone war.
But on the internet, though?
But you can call Yahoo the underdog.
Well, no, I mean, it's still... I'd like to see somebody else as the underdog, ideally.
I know what you mean.
Maybe.
But, a bit of balance.
They're
because
all big boys.
We might be saying in 5 years, if this announcement came 5 years, thank God somebody finally is making a change and having an OS that isn't all about Google.
Yeah.
So,
Quiero coming along, the French government-sponsored Euro search engine.
Is
it Quill, the Irish one?
Cool. I remember C-U-I-L, ages ago.
It's pronounced Cool, or whatever it is.
Cool, as in Finmacool.
Again, nothing else.
I'm going to use Wolfram Alpha for all my searches from now on.
That's really good.
That is really good.
I would do awesome searches with that. Like birth rate in France over birth rate in Zimbabwe. And I'm going to tell you the response straight away.
Can you actually just find stuff for it, though? If you're searching for MicOS or something.
You can't find Britney Spears pictures very easily. You can find everything else.
I'm sure if you could, though, it'd be a nice grid, wouldn't they?
I think the reason I am very, very glad to see Ubuntu make this move is because I made a bet with Graham that Bing would rise in market share.
Oh, of course. Well, can you remember when...
Hooray! Screw you, go Graham! other than that, I think it's terrible, and Ubuntu made a very bad move. And fortunately, Polly the Parrot agrees with me, that well-known critic. Canonical, what a bad move. You are playing right into the hands of Ballmer and company and alienating a lot of the more informed users of Ubuntu. Shame on you. Moving away from Ubuntu and staying clear of it is my next project in the area.
Hello, Sailor.
Going to move to CrunchBang or something.
Yeah, where is CrunchBang? There's been no CrunchBang release for a while.
CrunchBang hasn't been updated. Hasn't been a new standalone release since July last year. So, just as an aside, CrunchBang, folks, you got a good distro. Keep on with it.
That's what it helps.
Yeah.
I think Graham's right.
And that's the end of the podcast.
And with such lively discussion, we come to the end of our podcast. That's
attention, I've just got an important message to make here. Now, normally, a lot of people would be expecting my one more thing, but I can't do it anymore because Steve Jobs has stopped doing it. At the iPad announcement, there was no one more thing. Now, anybody who knows me knows that I basically want to be Steve Jobs.
You dress like him.
I will be Steve Jobs at some point, and his one more things were the highest, the peak of entertainment in the electronics industry. But now he's not doing them anymore, so I can't do them unless our listeners have any other proposals.
No, I doubt it. Okay.
Oh well.
Cool. And with that, we come to the real end of our podcast, the first of season 2. Don't forget, we'd love to hear your suggestions, particularly for You Dare Us and In the Hot Seat. Please drop us a line, comments. You can actually email too. We are hopefully going to get off our backsides and set up an email address one of these days.
Hooray.
In the meantime, just email me directly, paul.hudson@futurenet.com. Let us know your comment and we'll read out the best every podcast if we get any at all. Don't forget, all the notes for the podcast are on the website once Graham types them all up, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.